Okay, well, good morning, everybody. First of all, I'd like to tell you all that I'm a Jenner. I'm sorry. I'm not supposed to be here, probably. And really, all the stuff that you guys see is not my fault. We're going to kick it down the road to somebody else. So, I'm going to talk a little bit about some of the work we've been doing. Some of this is stuff that I pulled out of the closet or out of the drawer from quite a while ago. When we were working, some of you might remember Murli Sadaya in our lab. He did some imaging work, and we worked with AMS. And so some of this stuff comes out of that. But just want to, my co-author's there, Ed Hughes, my boss. Of course, we can't get much done around there without somebody keeping the doors open, so I want to acknowledge him. Of course, everybody here knows what extraneous matter is, and mainly what we're going to focus on in this is bark and grass. And we know that extraneous matter right now is really the only classification measurement still done by a human classer. AMS has made huge strides in doing machine grading of just about everything, and they're trying to work on this and get a good machine grading system for extraneous matter also, and I think it's going to be achievable. The previous work that I was talking about is some work we did in collaboration with AMS some years ago, and I won't pretend that I'm an expert in image analysis or writing any of those algorithms that identify bark or grass or anything else. I'm just kind of the go-between between Murli and AMS and hopefully kind of help move that along. But one of the things that he did is come up with an algorithm that did a pretty good job of identifying extraneous matter. It could pick out different particles and decide whether or not it was bark and grass or if it was leaf. And one of the things we did was we gathered a whole lot of verification and comparison images to basically see how well that what he called CTIS, cotton trash identification system, how well it was working. And so with those samples, we took a classer sample and opened it up. And so basically, once you pull it open, there's four faces. And we took an image of those faces, one image of each one, a large area image, larger than HVI. This is about a 4-inch by 7-inch image, color. And then we had the classer actually go in and grade that image and give us a leaf grade and also circle things on there that he would call extraneous matter. So on the left there, you'll see kind of the raw image. There's some colors in there I'll talk about in a second. And on the right, you'll see the same image that the classer actually went in and circled things, say, hey, this is what I would call bark and grass. And when I say extraneous matter in this presentation, I mean bark grass. And then Murli went in with his CTIS algorithm and used that to identify the things that he thought were bark and grass also. And you can see there, just for this matter, we have a classer leaf grade of 3 and extraneous matter call, bark call for this sample. And the CTIS software said there was 11 objects in this image that they identified as bark. So some of the things that we got out of that were kind of interesting, and I'll just point this out, is of the images, and there were 800 of these images, there were quite a few. Of the images that had a class or call, we only had a couple that CTIS didn't find any bark in, these red ones here, only two out of all of them. But on the other hand, of the images that had no bark call on them, we had quite a few, these red bars, that CTIS found pieces of bark. And what we found was that CTIS was identifying a lot of things, small things and other, that we think the classer just overlooked because, you know, the classer is a human, and a human's good at looking at something and averaging it from afar, basically looking at the forest, while these algorithms look at the trees. And they look at every single thing and decide whether or not they see all the particles. And so it was picking up a lot of things that we didn't know if it was bark or not, and certainly it wasn't something that the classer was saying was a piece of bark or something of concern. So I started thinking about, well, we need to, if we're going to use these machines to grade cotton, look at extraneous matter, we need to have some idea of what is it that the classer considers extraneous matter or bark. How big does it have to be? What does it have to look like? How skinny is it? Or those kind of things. And then in a sample itself, how many of those objects actually trigger a call? And so I thought, well, I don't know anything about programming or images that much, but I know a little bit about how, you know, to find correlations. So I thought maybe I could do this part. So we're just using a off-the-shelf image processing software, and we threshold that image, and then we started looking at all the different particles in that image, in the same images that we got from the classer. And one of the things we did was ignore things less than 8 square pixels, which is about 2/200 of an inch. And that's because if we didn't, there was so much stuff on there, it was just kind of overwhelming. And we know that from previous work that a lot of folks consider things less than 2/200 to be pepper trash or dust. And so we didn't really we didn't think we needed to worry about that. So here's those images again. We have the original image on the left, the classer circled image, and then on the right is the image where we thresholded all the particles that we could see that were greater than that 8 square pixels. And then also in red, I circled the objects that were corresponded to the objects in the classer image. So you can see there we did it that way. And then what we did was we zeroed in on each one of those individual objects that the classer circled. And you can see the object there on the left. And in the middle is the thresholded image where we identified the particles. And I don't know if you can see it up there, but this particle actually, by the software, was broken into 3 different particles. I just went backwards. 3 different particles. We have one here, one here, one here. And so what I had a student do, and he worked for me for about 10 weeks this summer and then quit because he didn't like it, is he had to go in by hand and digitize every single one of those particles onto all those images that the classer circled. So we get to try to get the shape of what the classer was seeing. And that was a lot of fun. He quit. So then what we did was we went back and we did some analysis and looked at area, some shape parameters, area, perimeter, different things to tell us something about what's the shape of these things that the classer's circling. And also some color factors. And then I just wanted to look at how do they relate to the particles that they circled and how do they not relate to the particles that were not circled. Those shape factors that I think that some of them that were of most interest were the ones that kind of describe how long and skinny. And it's a little bit hard to see, but one of the things we did was fit a box. If you can fit the object into a box, then what's the height and width of that box? It tells us something about how skinny and long it is. Also, if you fit an ellipse to this object that is the same or equal area, then you have a major and minor axis that you can look at to tell something about how long and skinny. And then another thing we had was a ferret length, which is if you can put the object between a caliper, the widest caliper that it would measure, and also the narrowest caliper would be the minimum ferret. So those are some of the shape factors that we looked at. Now there was a lot of different measurements we had, and so we did a response, looking at the response to see which ones had the most effect, which one told us most about whether or not it was a particle, I call it a particle if it's not bark or the bark. And we have some very distinct some things that stuck out. First of all, I'll tell you this red line down here at the bottom on both of these, this is color and this is shape factors. That red line would correspond to a 0.01 p-value in significance. So almost everything we measured was significant. This green line right here and right here on this one corresponds to very, very highly significant, very, very small p-value, smaller than 0.01. And then, of course, we have these that kind of stick out here. They're up at the top. And those are the ones I'm kind of concentrating on just for this presentation, is these ones that kind of grouped off to the side. If we look at the shape factors, things like area, perimeter, the height and width of that box that we could stick the particle in, the major axis on the ellipse, the ferret length, again, that caliper measurement, or the minimum ferret, you can see there's quite a bit of difference between what I call the particles, things that weren't circled, and the extraneous matter, things that are circled. You can see there's a big difference between the means of these things. But mainly what I want you to do is look at these middle columns. And we can see that the 95th percentile, the top of the particles, is always lower than the 5th percentile of the extraneous matter. There's a difference there. So 95% of the particles are different than 95% of the extraneous matter in terms of these sizes. And it's usually that it's smaller, or the particles are rounder, not as long and elongated as the extraneous matter. just show you some distributions here for this. These are for the major axis, the ellipse. We can see that they're a lot different. If you look at the extraneous matter, these tend to be in the higher end here. This is pixels in terms of the length of the axis. And for particles, they all tend to be very small down here in the very end. In fact, pretty much less than 50. If you look at for the area of the object, again, the extraneous matter tends to be much larger. And of course, that's just kind of obvious when we look at the images, but we wanted to get some handle on that. And the other particles tend to be very small. If we look at color factors, some of the things we measured, these are just kind of the raw ones. Actually, this is the maximum L, A, or B. We did it in two color spaces, or the maximum R, G, and B. There wasn't a lot of difference. There's a lot of overlap. There's not as much difference here in color as there was in shape, which, again, I didn't think that was real surprising. And if you look at the distributions of a couple of them, maximum L value or maximum G green for the objects we're looking at, you can see that there is some difference. There's the extraneous matter is skewed a little bit more to the right, moved over, but again, there's not a lot of difference. So what we find in this? Well, one thing we found just in these raw kind of measurements is that almost everything we measured was significant in terms of looking different between the particles and the extraneous matter. Shape factors were the most significant. In fact, those two I showed you, if the major ellipse was greater than 50 pixels, then it probably is going to be extraneous matter no matter what. And the same thing with area. If it's greater than 1,000 square pixels, then it's a pretty good bet that it's extraneous matter. What do we do with this? Well, I'm going to continue and look at threshold, trying to figure out, look at some more of those numbers and see, are there lines like we just talked about, say 50 pixels for the major axis, that really give us a definite idea about, you can pretty much bet that's extraneous matter. Also look at where we have overlaps. Maybe then some of these color measurements can come in and help us differentiate between things that are close to the same size or close to the same elongation, but maybe the color will help differentiate a little bit. And then also that question about, well, how many of these things, you know, have to be on there, or how much space do they have to take up on the image for there to actually be a call? And so that's kind of looking at. And then that big question mark is, you guys work with this stuff a lot more than I do, and if you have suggestions about this, I'd be happy to talk to you about it. Or if you want me to send you these 800 images, I'd be happy to do that too, and you can work with them. So, but I'm hoping that some of these people, folks who are working on this, can maybe use some of this information to help them once they identify things they think are extraneous matter to then relate it back to the cluster, which we know is the gold standard, and we want to be able to quote-unquote kind of copy that. Thank you for listening to me.
Thank you. We have a question.
Yes.
Derek,
yes. When we did those images, we actually scanned them in a scanner. So they were pressed underneath in the scanner bed underneath the lid. So they were, or actually they pushed them down by hand, didn't they, Jimmy? Was that?
Wait,
yeah. So it was pressed up against the glass, and then we had a scanner, we scanned them in color image there. So. Well, extraneous matter is bark. In this case, we're really talking about bark.
And particles, they are very small particles, so there may be also bark and grass.
They could be, and that's one of the things we had back when Morali was doing this analysis, is CETUS would identify very small things, some things that would be hard to see if you're looking at it with your eye even, as bark. And, you know, the classer didn't consider that bark. They ignore it because I guess it's too small. And we were trying to, you know, bring those together. How do we differentiate? How do we reconcile that?
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.